I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the IRTPD Working Group call on Monday, 16th of September, 2013. On the call today, we have Christian Durain, Kevin Erdman, Rob Golding, Volker Grayman, Mikey O'Connor, and Graham Bunton. We have James Badal, who will be joining us shortly. And from staff, we have Lars Hoffman, Marika Connings, and myself, Julia Chauvelin. We have apologies from Holly Raish, Paul Diaz, and Chris Chaplow. May I remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you, and over to you, Mikey.
Thanks, Julia. As always, a great job, and welcome everybody to the call. We'll just take our brief moment to update SOIs and take a look at the agenda. Essentially, what I want to do is drag you through a draft that came out of a call between James and me and Lars late last week. I mostly just want to point to some stuff and let you react to it, but you know, I think this is one that's going to need some close reading by you folks who are good at legal writing, which I'm not. So anyway, we'll take a look at that, and then we'll zip along to charter questions E and F, see sort of where we are at. And, Volker, good. I'm glad you can hear. I'm not sure you can speak, just given the behavior of your microphone.
I can, but there's another call on the line in the room, so I'm
muted. Perfect. Perfect. I'm so glad to hear that. Okay. I'm much relieved. Thanks, Volker. Any updates to the agenda or statements of interest people want to share? Okay. What's on your screen now is a draft that I circulated to the list late last week, and I had this big disclaimer on there that said, look, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know how to write this kind of stuff. It's really complicated for me, and so it may be handy for you to have this draft in front of you because you can't scroll the screen. This is working off my screen. And as we go, if there are obvious changes that you've spotted, I'm more than happy to drive those into this draft. But I think this is going to need some work by better minds than mine. So here we go. Basically, what we had done on the last two calls is we'd introduced the idea that there was pretty broad support for the idea that registrants should have some access to this process in the event that their work with their registrar failed. And James had some reservations about that. I could hear it in his voice on the call, and they became clearer when we went into this, and I think we've resolved them. I think I'm going to nudge James to listen to the recording because I haven't heard from him since then. But let me just tell you what we've done. So in the first paragraph, you're starting to see some stuff happening. One of the things that James was worried about, and I think he's correct, is that if we just say registrants in this conversation, we're not including a person who is no longer the registrant who wants to file an appeal. And so we invented a term called the registrant claimant, and we'll define that in a minute. So this is the first change that we made since the call last week, is to introduce this idea that there is such a person who's not a registrant. They have a claim to being the registrant, but they are no longer because the domain has been transferred away from them. So that change ripples through the next paragraph because now, instead of just talking about registrars, basically everything in paragraph 2 on the screen is changing from registrar to parties or claimant, because now we've got the addition of registrants and registrant claimants into the pile, and the word registrar no longer makes sense. So that I'm fairly comfortable with, but again, this is sort of a logic problem, and so those of you who are more familiar with legal drafting are going to want to read this really carefully and make sure that the logic that I have written is actually right, because, as I say, I'm not terribly confident in that. Okay, so then I'm dragging you down into the definitions. There's a little editorial note I'm going to skip. It's just a little thing. And you can see all these kinds of parties being defined, including registrant. And we probably need to touch this again, because we need to make it clear that this is the person who has, you know, that is the current registered name holder. So that's one I'm going to highlight for further work. Do this as my convention. Put brackets around it. Something we need to come back to. And now take you down to the registrant claimant, which is new. And we invented this on the fly, on the call. And I don't think either James or I have very strong editorial pride here, but we took the best crack at it we could. And again, I really want to focus your attention on this. So what we said is the registrant claimant is, for the purposes of this policy, the person or entity that asserts a claim to be the registrant immediately preceding the transfer that is under dispute. So we're doing a couple of things. We're describing what they are, and we're describing when they were that thing. And so I think you clever people are going to need to work on this a bit. Oh, and there's a clever person right there. Kevin, go ahead.
This is Kevin Erdman. I like the thrust of putting in a definition of a person like this that is not necessarily a registrant at the time of the filing, but I question whether we need to limit it to just immediately preceding the transfer that is under dispute, that it may be better to state it as asserts to be the lawful registrant under the applicable law, or much like that. Because in the situation where there's a first transfer and then, you know, two or three transfers down the road or whatever Jenkins goes on, you know, there may not be the immediate precedent by the time that this dispute is filed, or at least is a dispute resolution.
Thanks, Kevin. That's great. And what we were trying to get to, we're presuming that this person, this registrant claimant, is going to name the transfer that's under dispute in their claim. So they're going to say, I dispute the transfer that happened, you know, back in at some date. And so that they would define the transfer that's under dispute in their application. That's the reason we framed it that way. And so intermediate folks, you know, we thought we were sidestepping that issue by framing it this way, but you know, I think this is exactly the kind of thing that we need to really get right. And so I like your suggestion a lot. So I'm going to leave it with that and go to Volker.
Yeah, I'm still not feeling very comfortable in taking the policy that we currently have and applying it for the registrant claimant as well. because I don't think it really fits to the problem at hand or to what we're trying to achieve. First, there probably needs to be a lot more rewriting of the policy. Secondly, the process is designed currently as a process between as a dispute between two registrars, and with corresponding penalties and cost issues attached to that, and adding a registrant as a potential claimant into that package is not what the policy was originally designed for, and I'm not sure if it's fit for that as well. So that's just something I would like to put on the table as a concern here. Also, when a registrant claimant brings a complaint, are both registrars then respondents to that claim, or is just one of them? If so, which one, the receiving or the gaining registrar, who would be the respondent in that case? Both, I would assume. And if we allow even further down the if we drill even further down the down that question, if we allow this to apply to transfers of ages past, where none of the registrars that are currently registrar of record for that domain name would be the current registrar of the let me say that again. None of the registrars that are party to the transfer that is under the dispute are currently registrar of record because the domain name has been transferred again, or even deleted and then re-registered. So the question would be, if this is the same domain name, how would you treat that, and which registrar would be the respondent? You might have a decision, for example, that a transfer should be undone, and the registrant who was never party to the transfer at the time would be required to undo the transfer or transfer the domain name to a third party who he had never any contact with, would be violating his agreement with his registrar, his registrant, and would not even have been the respondent to that transfer or to this process, because he wasn't the gaining or the losing registrar. So this is a couple of issues that I have with applying this blanket to this process and expanding it to include also past transfers of from days of yore.
Thanks, Volker. Take a look at the two little notes that I wrote and see if I captured it, your comment, enough. And if not, make sure that we drive that in. Those are good comments, and I don't want to lose them. One of my reactions as I was laboring through trying to edit this policy is pretty similar to yours, and that is that this policy is very cumbersome in the way that it's written. And, I was feeling pretty hard-pressed to sort of shoehorn in this idea, because the sense that I've got is that the group is pretty comfortable with the idea. But this policy is so old, and it's been edited so many times. Well, it's just old and really, I think badly written. And so one of the things that would be nice is if we could get a really good rewrite of this policy along the way of doing this, because it's in bad need of it. So I would support a lot of that. I think in terms of some of the other issues that you're raising, we'll just have to let those play out in the conversation and see how we do. But great comments. Now, is that a follow-up comment you've got, Volker, or is that the old hand?
The old vestigial hand, sorry.
Okay.
I'm lazy.
Vestigial. Oh, I like a vestigial hand. Okay, well, see how I do as I chop away at this, Volker, because, I was struggling a bit. I will admit it. That, okay, so... can't remember why. Oh, yeah. One of the things that there are two pieces of homework, I think, for Lars or Marika or both. One is that I wasn't sure whether this policy is now included in the picket fence and thus doesn't need to be included in the actual agreement. Volker, you're probably going to know the answer on this as well. Or do the more current agreements just point to the picket fence policies and say, and do everything in that pile? This is one of the sort of dusty facets of this that I highlighted because I do think we need a rewrite on this. Lars, go ahead.
This is Lars. Thank you, Mikey. I had a quick look at RAA, and I will copy and paste the paragraph that I believe, although I'm obviously not a lawyer, applies, and I think it's just part of the picket fence general adhere to the policies part. The TDIP is not mentioned explicitly at all in the RAA. But I don't know about the registry and registrar agreements. I'm still looking into that.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's just an action item to keep our eye on because that's sort of my thought on that. And the other one is back when we have all these... Oops, sorry. A mouse that I still haven't quite learned how to use. We have all these definitions. Registrant. Registrar of record. Gaining registrar. And it may be that back in the day when this policy was written, there weren't definitions of these things, but I would be interested to know whether there are now definitions of these things somewhere else. Again, maybe in the RAA, the RAs, and R, you know, et cetera. Because I don't, if there are definitions of those, I would think we'd want to amend those rather than carry them independently in this policy. So that's just sort of another almost architectural question, again, for Lars and Marika. Lars, are you hand up on this one as well? If so, go ahead.
Sorry, it's an old hand. I'll take it down.
Okay. Well, just to touch on that action item again, I think we need to take a look at all these definitions and see whether they are defined in other agreements and thus should not be defined in here. Just as sort of a general, you know, this is again partly the general rewrite of this. This is just pretty darn dusty policy. And I started sneezing as I was walking through it. Okay, so then... we get to the actual dispute resolution process. Yeah, and this is possibly, Volker, where we could add language to... Oops, sorry to roll this all over the place. Again, this is a bad mouse experience. I think this whole section needs to be rewritten. This is the section. I will stop this stupid rolling. I am really sorry. This is essentially the section that defines the process itself. And I think back in the day when this was written, they faced a completely blank slate and didn't, you know, and so they felt that they had to write out every step of the process along the way, and it may be that we still need to do that. But I do really think that this process needs to be really carefully scrubbed and reworked. And so, Volker, I think that there are several approaches to this. One would be to say, you know, there's a process for when registrars initiate it, and then there's another whole section that talks about, and there's a process when registrants or registrant claimants initiate it that might duplicate much of it, but with language that would address some of the issues that you're raising. And or something else. Anyway, I'm agreeing with you that this is a bit of a puzzle. What I did in my first try was I tried to keep the process the same and add those requirements that we described that talked about building a record leading up to this. That if a registrant or a registrant claimant was initiating this, they would have to pass through some hurdles before they could initiate the process. And from this part of the conversation with James and Lars came James's other concern, I think, which is that when we talked about this on the phone, we talked about putting the ICANN compliance office in the sequence of hoops that a registrant claimant would have to go through. And I think James's concern, and I tend to agree, is that it might be better to use a different part of the organization to establish that record, because this really isn't a registrar compliance regulatory type issue. This is really more of a record creating process leading up to the dispute resolution process here. And so we puzzled on that, and you can see sort of where we wound up. And I've got a nibble from Marika, so I'll go to Marika next. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. One thing the working group may want to consider, because I agree, it may be a bit awkward to have, you know, compliance in the mix here, as indeed they serve as a compliance of, you know, our registry is complying with their contractual obligations and not necessarily checking whether a registrant has filed questions or their responses, but whether those kind of, you know, checks should then be done by the dispute resolution provider, where indeed there's a number of requirements of information that they need to provide that then is checked by the dispute resolution provider, and only if their file is complete they can proceed. And for example, that may be require, you know, a record of them having filed a complaint and that response that was received from ICANN compliance that they then include in that file, for example, which, you know, doesn't put any requirements on ICANN compliance to do any additional checks or verification, but it just basically includes in the record that, or the file, that the complainant needs to submit to the third party of, you know, these are the different elements you need to provide to us in order for us to deem your complaint valid. And one of those would be to demonstrate that you've actually filed a complaint and it was not possible to resolve that, and, you know, provide the supporting information, which may be similar to what would be provided from the registrar. I guess it may be a similar way where the registrar is basically asked to demonstrate that they have reached out to the registrar, and that the registrar, I don't know, it could even be a kind of standardized form which the registrar is asked to complete, in which they indicate why they believe or why they weren't able to resolve it or why they weren't willing to initiate the TDARP for them, which may give the third party a way to evaluate on a number of criteria whether the complainant indeed meets the criteria that you set out in this policy to actually file a complaint, or whether they actually fail on a number of items, which means that they wouldn't be able to file their complaint.
I think what we're describing here, and I like it, let me just see if I can capture it, is that maybe we skip that ICANN step. I mean, essentially what we started out with at the very beginning of this is we said, okay, registrar to, you know, you're the registrant claimant. You go to your registrar. They solve it one way or the other, and the story ends. That's the usual. Then what we said was two steps. First step is, okay, I'm the registrant. I want to appeal it to ICANN Compliance, and then if ICANN Compliance can't resolve it to my satisfaction, I want to take that record of those two preceding steps to the TDRP provider. And that record was what triggered the provider. I think what we're saying now is that another alternative would be to let the provider document the record, in which case, presumably, it would be the registrar-initiated process. And then the next step would be to go to the TDRP provider and have them build the record. I think I'm removing the ICANN hop in that process. So it's, and by the way, we've also got the registry hop in the middle, which presumably we're probably also going to eliminate, so that we're basically taking almost all the hops out of this. And it's either go to the registrar or go to the TDRP provider. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, it isn't, Marika. It's not so much that the third party would be collecting or vetting, compiling the record. I think it's more that the third party would be vetting. So basically, instead of having maybe the registrar or compliance basically saying, yes, we think you should go to a third party or you have standing. And I think the idea is indeed that some of the documents may come from the registrar or from compliance as a kind of, indeed compiling their record. But there's a third party that would actually do that validation of saying, have we received all the information that is needed to actually move forward with this complaint? And if not, no, you can't go further. And I said, that some of that may be standard information that is then provided, provide a copy of the email or your complaint form to ICANN and the response you receive, and something similar may exist for the registrar. But I think I see Christine saying it's something they do, because I think indeed it's something I've picked up as well from the discussions we've had on the UDRP discussions, is where UDRP providers actually have a first check and where they actually see was all the information that needed to be provided, has that been provided? Is it indeed a valid complaint before it actually even moves to the next step? So something similar here may be done, and indeed taking it out of the registrar or ICANN compliance to make any determination, but serve more as a kind of, they provide the factual information, which is then checked and validated by the third-party dispute resolution provider.
Okay, that's good. And Christine is saying in the chat, yeah, we do that now. In TDRP, we take the complaint, we take in the complaint, and then we go to the registry for the first level record. In this scenario, Christina, I think we'd probably have you going to the registrars as well, because if we take the this process, then the only record is going to be at the registrar level. And so you would have to go to the registrar. What does that do to you? Is that okay?
This is Christine from NAF. Absolutely. We go to the registrars for UDRP. We go to the registries to get TDRP information. We're pretty comfortable contacting registrars and registries as needed, and ICANN as well. So if a party has, filed something with the registrar, filed something with the registry, filed something with ICANN, whatever we decide at the end of the day, whatever hoops this registrant claimant, as we're calling them, has to jump through, we're pretty comfortable following up with the right parties to make sure and get that information. Of course, the registrant claimant is also free to submit that with their complaint, but if they don't have it or if there's underlying information that we need to gather, we can easily do that. That's not hard.
All right, then I'm going to take that last bit off and just leave it there. okay, that's good, helpful. Get really frisky. I'm not sure I can do that. I'm not going to try that. I'm going to leave this for now, but I may bump that into the preferred alternative slot and say that where we're heading is to eliminate that ICANN compliance step. But leave it in just so that people know that we looked at it and debated it for a while. Okay, so now I continue to sort of try to shoehorn this into the existing process. And for the most part now, I'm just broadening the terms. Because basically, one way to approach this is to say that the rest of this process is basically the same. It just depends on who's initiating it. So it could be that the claimant is a registrar, or in this wording anyway, it could be either the registrar of record or the registrar at the time of the disputed transfer, or we could even broaden that further. We'll have to kind of work our way through the implications of all that to be any registrar in the chain. So we'll have to cogitate about that. But that's essentially what's going on in this part of the draft is just that intent. And so I basically substitute the word claimant in a lot of places. But again, you people who read these things carefully need to check my work because this isn't my strong suit. And so, for example, here's a place that I missed. Because in some cases, this is the filing registrar, but in other cases, it would be it might be somebody else, et cetera, et cetera. So, this is contract drafting stuff, and I started to get very uncomfortable with what I was doing, and so I kind of stopped. Just want to check and see anything else. I added, in this section, this is another thing that's awkward about this policy, is that all of a sudden it sort of falls into this, it starts out talking about the process, but then all of a sudden it starts putting all the documentation requirements in. It makes it very hard to read and understand what's going on. This is another candidate for the major rewrite, is to split the process part of the policy out from the content part. So this is another one for Lars and Marika to just add to the rewrite punch list that says this, especially section 3, is very awkward. And I think actually section 3 and section 4 are very similar. It's just that section 3 is the one that's at the registry level. And then section 4, I think, is similarly awkward. Happens. Yeah, see, now we're all of a sudden we're back to process. We've jumped out of documentation now. At 3.2, we're back into who has to do what and by when. And then again, suddenly we fall into this giant list of documentation that needs to be provided. And then, we even tell them what they have to write. It's sort of like, good grief. So this this policy, when you start to read it, strikes me as being really awkward. And I think we could do both registrants and registrars a great good service by making this policy easier to understand and read. So now I've missed... Christine's got a bunch of stuff in the chat. Christine is, I think, agreeing with me and saying, look, the UDRP did it right with a substance document and a rules document. Most policies that followed, including the URS, married the two, and it's a giant pain in the neck. Bit high. Question, wrong chat. Oh. Okay. So, Lars, take it away.
Thanks, Mikey. I'm just wondering whether we should maybe form a little sub-team with Christine to maybe rewrite bits of this policy and see what we can steal, quote-unquote, from other policies and from her own experience to maybe come up with some sort of proposal to present to the group for this further discussion.
I'm fine with that as long as Christine is willing to be so volunteered. I think that it's probably incumbent on you and Marika to do the heavy lifting of the drafting, because if I can channel Christina for a minute, I imagine she's got another day job that keeps her pretty busy. But, it might be that there's sort of an advisory group. I would certainly want Kevin in there. He's been a big source of ideas. I would, as I think about it, pretty soon the subgroup becomes the whole group. And I'm fine either way. As chair, I don't have a real strong opinion, but I don't want to have the burden of the drafting fall on folks, because I think the first draft is going to be a lot of work. Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to know that we're happy to do the drafting, but of course, to do drafting, we need some input, and I think that's where the suggestion of having a sub-team comes from, basically, to get some people. Christine already made some suggestions in the chat, but basically to run through this and think this through. I think we really need some input from you all in order to hold that plan, because I think otherwise we may be in a situation where we're drafting something that people then will tell us, like, where does this come from and what were you thinking? So I think, as Christine has, I think, written several disputes, policies already, I think she's, for one, a great source of knowledge. And, of course, if she has the time, we can make her brains. But I think also others may want to join in a little brainstorm session around this and maybe walk through it, as we've done a little bit now, but then maybe in more detail and trying to fill in some of the substance. I think that would really help us to actually hold the pen and write up some of that language, because neither Lars nor I are lawyers, so we definitely will need some input from all of you.
Well, let me just check with folks in the group and see if anybody would like to join this drafting sub-team. And if everybody's hand goes up, then we'll just do it on these calls. And if everybody wants to stick Christina with the heavy lifting, then we'll proceed like that. Bartlett's giving me a check mark. Is that, Bartlett, does that mean, yeah, I agree, stick Christina with this job? Or, yeah, I'll join the group.
Oh, no, I was saying, are you hearing me?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was saying I was agreeing to being a part of the drafting.
Oh, okay. So Bartlett's in. Anybody, go ahead and use your check marks if anybody else would like to be in the drafting group. Okay, so Christina's in, Bartlett's in. Volker, you want to be in the drafting group? He said, hinting strongly. Attaway, Volker. Now I'm comfortable. Kevin, do you want to be in? I think you would be a big contributor. If you felt so inclined. I don't want to put you in a spot, but I've always counted on you for clever stuff. Okay, I didn't see Kevin rush to the barricade. So we'll leave it at that. It'll be Volker and Bartlett and Christina. Christine, sorry. And off you go. I think that this will be hugely helpful. And Marika, just sort of a tactical idea is that you may want to chop this document into one of your mind mapping tools, either the proprietary one or the open source one, because I think a lot of this is probably fine. It's just that it needs to be reorganized, and it may be a lot easier to do that in a mind mapping context.
Yeah, and this is Marika, and I think the mind map may help, maybe help as well to identify whether it's indeed something we can fit into the existing policy or whether we really need to look at, you know, a standalone document.
Yeah, I think that's right. And then would make it much easier to also create that document if it turned out that's what you needed to do. Okay, well, with that, I think I'm just going to roll through the rest and see if there's anything particularly controversial. I think mostly what I was doing throughout the rest of this draft was just substituting parties, you know, either claimant or party or something like that. But you drafting folks are going to want to take a really careful look at what I did. Volker, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something that, just as a caveat, when I'm on the drafting team, my thinking was that you were talking about chopping up, and Marika said something similar as well. I think that may actually be the best way forward in chopping this up into two policies, having one policy between registrars and one policy where a registrant has extra standing, which might be slightly different from the existing policy, but be more tailored to the needs of a registrant in bringing a complaint like that.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good idea. And certainly I wouldn't resist that idea at all. And it might make it easier for both sets of readers to better understand it, because then registrar stuff could be written. Yeah, enough said. Great idea. Kevin just emailed that he'll join the list. Cool. Thank you, Kevin. I think you have always added a lot to these conversations, so I'm glad to see that you're in the game. Christine, don't take us there. TDRP A and B. Pretty soon we're going to have IRTP A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and TDRP. Oh, God. I hope we don't go there. All right. So I think that's enough on that topic. It's about quarter to the hour, and I think I'd like to move on to the conversations about charter questions E and F. And part of the reason is because I think I'm going to stop sharing, and I'm going to sort of give the screen back to Lars. Maybe, Lars, you can throw up sort of the current state of our draft, if you've got it. I can't remember what document that is. But my recollection is that we sort of breezed through conversation about these. Ah, way to go, Lars. Zoom in a little. I'm going to sync you guys. Unsync and let Lars. Lars, why don't you drag us off to the right spot? This is still in A. I think E and F are. There's D. Okay, so here's E right now. I'm going to sync you all to the top of that. This is kind of where we stand. Uh, I was thinking that we concluded that, yeah, see, we've already got language there. The bottom of page 10. Well, let's just take a look at that. Starting at the bottom of page 10, where we have our preliminary recommendation. We've pretty much said, let the 2009 and 2013 RAA take care of the penalties and not duplicate them in a policy. And so I want to just confirm this with you, because I pretty much agree with this recommendation, and I want to see if everybody else does. If it does, we can declare it done. Similarly, I think pretty comfortable that we have a recommendation on F as well. And part of the reason I'm pushing this a little here is because if that's true, then we can really zero in on rewriting the TDRP and focus our work. So sort of a first call, and maybe we'll treat E as finished. Not seeing anybody throwing themselves on the barricade, so let's presume that E is in pretty good shape and take a look at our recommendation on F, which says, no, we don't really recommend eliminating FOAs right now. Again, I'm pretty comfortable with this recommendation, and so again, sort of a first call on this language. And then if that's true, Lars, I think we may be at the point where we could push a copy of this out to the list and say, with the exception of charter question C, which we're going to go do a subgroup on, this is our preliminary set of recommendations, and so people ought to read them with the idea in mind that this is the language that might find its way into the final report. And it might also be a good time for you and Marika to circulate this draft to your staff colleagues to just get that process underway, and then just make it really clear that we're still working on charter question C. Lars has given me a big thumbs up. That's great. If people are comfortable with that, I think we'll just wrap this one up today, because I think we've made a lot of progress and have a pretty good plan of attack, especially if the subgroup can get together between now and next week. I don't know if it's realistic to expect a draft. That's probably pushing our luck a little bit. Maybe that's what Lars has got his hand up for. Lars, go ahead.
Thanks, Mikey. This is Lars. Just very quickly, I was just wondering if you wrap up the call, whether the people who volunteered, and Mikey, I don't know if as co-chair you also implicitly volunteered, want to stay on to maybe find some time on our agendas. Alternatively, I can send out a doodle.
Well, here's where I was headed. I was thinking that maybe the time is next week's call, and that what we do is we say, because it's on everybody's diary already, and so what if we declare next week's call a meeting of that subgroup, and, you know, clearly anybody who wanted to join would be welcome, but that's the next step, is that we convene the subgroup in this time slot. How does that sit with people? And we could make it clear on the notice that's what's going on, and say, look, you know, nobody's excluded. you're welcome to join. It's going to be recorded, but it's going to be a working session where we're doing this pretty intense drafting exercise with very interested folks, and you're not required to come, something like that. And that way we can just go ahead, because we've made enough progress on all the other charter questions that I think we're in pretty good shape to hit a draft by Argentina. And having surprised Marika by suddenly going extremely fast in thick who is, and not letting this, you know, not giving the staff process enough lead time to really be completed, I think it's fine to not go super duper fast at this point. So let's do that. Let's treat next week's call as a subgroup call. We'll roll up our sleeves. Yes, I will be a member of that subgroup, and we'll carry on from there. And I think with that, we'll wrap this call up a few minutes early, and see some of you next week and the rest of you a week from then. That's it for me, unless anybody has any final comments.
Thanks, Mikey.
Okay, gang. See you in a week or two. Right on. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks. Take care.